Today, this is your Trace Lee. That was Joe Bonamassa and Robert Cray with Give Me One Reason. And that's pretty much the chorus that's being heard around the country today. Give us one reason to vote for you. We were having a little difficulty starting, but we started. And this is your Trace Lee. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. It's Tuesday, October the 23rd. The day after the third and final round of political thrust and parry between presidential candidates Barack Obama and Mitt Romney, this time at Lynn University in Boca Raton, Florida. And now, with the so-called debates over, it's more like a Q&A to me, including that between the vice presidential candidates, comes the mad dash toward the finish line looming just ahead on November the 6th. It's a virtual dead heat between Obama and Romney, and so every vote counts. The problem is, by this time in an election cycle, people's minds, for the most part, are pretty much made up, and they're either in one camp or another. Plus, the polls are showing that it's a very tight race, so that means that neither candidate is significantly ahead of each other, of the other, I should say, at this point, and the race, therefore, could go either way. Plus, November the 6th, as I said, is just around the corner, and there isn't enough time to start a long romance with new voters. So each of the candidates has a couple of options. One, of course, is not an option. They have to hold on to what they've got. Their loyal constituents, they have to hold on to them. They also have to steal voters from the other's camp. And that means also that they have to target that pool of voters called the undecideds. They have to target them and initiate a whirlwind romance to get them to say, yes, we're going to go with you. But will the undecideds now commit? Will enough of the decideds jump ship? Will third-party voters stay their course, stay right where they are and not move? We don't know. Did the debates do the job? That's the question today. You, of course, as part of our homework assignment, you watched the debate last night, no doubt, and so you can offer your analysis to these questions, the responses to these questions, and we're going to get into that today. 1-888-874-4888. We'll be talking about where you see the candidates situating themselves. We'll certainly talk about your view of the debate and the substance of the debate, especially in light of what we heard yesterday, and we talked about that. A small piece by Michael Scheuer that played, and this was going back quite a few years, in which he was talking about exactly what has happened, that Iran would emerge as a huge focus in the course of U.S. foreign policy. But I also want you to put into play today, as we talk, not only the substance of that lecture that we heard yesterday, but also the comments that I talked about, the comments I made that, isn't it odd, in all of the discussions of foreign policy, basically the United States literally is in the mix all over the developing world. And there is this continuation of an old policy that the United States and other major powers, including now China and Russia, they historically have played out their ideological differences in other parts of the world. They go elsewhere and they do their thing, wreak havoc, cause confusion and death, create major, major problems that are not easily fixed. And again, going back to Michael Schreuer, much of what the United States is dealing with today as foreign policy challenges, these issues were created by the United States, largely in the context of being a proxy for other countries dealing with their issues. In this part of the world that the foreign policy focus was placed last night, we have a history, a long history, of stepping into conflicts in which we have no discernible interest, and doing so not only at our own expense as a country, and it's been huge, it's been in the trillions of dollars by now, but also in terms of lives. The United States continues to have, we have large contingents of soldiers placed all over the world, that in instances when we look at it really closely, there was no immediate reason for us to militarily engage. And it continues to be an expense. You still have to maintain them. You still have to pay soldiers. You still have to arm them. You still have to give them weapons and tanks and whatever else they would need to prosecute wars of very dubious origin. So, your thoughts today at 1-888-874-4888. We'll resume our discussion from yesterday, and we'll pick up right after this very short break. Make me change my mind. Don't we all? You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Etrice Lee, and we're up next with Alex. Hello, Alex. You're on the air.
Hi, Etrice. Great show, and long-time listener in the past from you.
Thank you. What are your observations?
Well, the way I look at it, in my opinion, it seems like pretty incredible that this country has picked up Barack Obama. And I think it's all kind of, we kind of all kind of realize it's kind of a setup in a way. And for me, the way I look at it is that we picked a black president that no one knew anything about, and he came out of nowhere. And then he got elected for presidency. And basically, he is to continue with the agenda. So then this way, it's a distraction. So now you have a black president. So then the rest of the country, mostly in the middle, you know, white America, would not kind of throw out the racist card. So they can go ahead and do what they need to do, and then not use the racist card against them, so it kind of numbing down, quieting the people, so people won't rebel.
Why would you dismiss that this may very well have been his own personal ambition to be president? And
well,
he orchestrated
again,
it, he constructed a system to deliver him the desired result, and it worked, and he's elected. And in that regard, is no different from any other candidate,
yeah.
A Kennedy or a Nixon or a Bush, wanting to be president.
But what I'm saying is just to keep, if there was a white president in now, then everyone would rebel and say, what the hell is going on with our country? What? And now they can't blame it on a black person. So now I'm just throwing that out. And my opinion is that I think that he will still be elected again this coming around. And again, because again, they're not going to use the racist card. And then for another 4 years, and then I can pretty much guarantee you after the next 4 years, after Obama, there's going to be, guess who's going to be elected? A woman. So now to keep us quiet and shut up. So that's just my opinion for another 8 years. So we're looking at 12 years of hell in this country.
Okay.
That's the way.
All right, so I see where you're going with that. Now, let me ask you, where are you, if you care to share it with us, where are you politically in the scheme of things as we get closer to November 6th? What is your political position?
I don't know, because again, definitely it's not the lesser two evils, because that doesn't make a hell of a difference. It was just interesting then these debates. How come we did not hear the other parties, like the Green Party, you know, the Liberty Party? You even you have the Tea Party, and you even have the Communist Party. You know, have people listen to other points of view, and you can see how much is pretty much rigged up already. So
you would put yourself in which camp? If you were to put, are you in an undecided voter at this point, or are you leaning towards someplace else?
The best thing is not to vote, my point of view.
And, you decided not to vote?
Yeah, not to vote, because then if enough people do it, then it would kind of show our political system to say what's going on here.
If you decide not to vote, will you not be giving credence to the idea that there, in fact, are just two parties, and you dismiss also any of the other parties?
But again,
you're doing the same thing.
Again, if everyone does not vote because everyone's fed up and sick of this game and this rigging of it, then the people who do vote, then it kind of shows them who's really running these things. So let's say if you have voting and you had only 20% of people voted, 80% did not, then you really would know the other 20% that are out there kind of running this game that really and also might be manipulated by the system. So,
but at the same time, I mean, let's face facts. If we go with your scenario, it doesn't change the system's interest, because it doesn't care whether it wins with 1% of the vote.
Of course.
It doesn't care whether 0.5% of the population votes. It cares only that it wins.
Correct. No, I know what you're saying, and I agree with you. But the thing, again, what other options are there? I mean, again, it's you're not going to get anywhere with any of the other parties. And you're not getting anywhere with this party. My point was just that it seems like a black president as a president, it's kind of detergent, a deferent to not showing a real problem, so we can't use the race card against our government. And he'll be elected again, and that's just the way the system is set up, the way my point of view. And then after Obama, it'll be a woman. Just again, just keep distracting us from everything that's going on around us while everything else is falling apart. It's like saying that you come up to your neighborhood, to your house, and you see your next neighbor's house, and there's a big party there with strippers and a whole bunch of people just having a great party. So you're distracted looking at your neighbor's house, while if you look at your own home, which you've been distracted, your house is on fire. So all this whole thing is just mirrors and tricks to distract the population.
Well, Alex, I get where you're going. Mm-hmm. We want to know, but Don't hang up yet. I have one more question to ask you. I just want to remind folks, it's 1-888-874-4888. Alex, what was the tipping straw for you in this election that produced this decision to uninvolve yourself?
I think I'm part of millions of other people. This all probably started, if anyone's conscious enough or aware or awoken, that this all happened back towards Reagan. So that's where I'm coming from. And ever since then, it's just been a huge boulder that keeps getting bigger and bigger and rolling down the hill and crushing everything that's in its way. And every year, every election.
You don't even see the possibility. You don't even see a rainbow in third party initiatives.
No, you know what finally snuffed out my candle, my light, was that, and I'm assuming, and I'm very angerful and stuff, in reference to Obama, because I figured that here's a person that came from all this racism, all this stuff, that kind of understands, and he completely sold out to everyone. And I blame him even worse. I thought I would never hate someone more than Bush. Now Obama filled in that spot because he has given up so much. And I figured that at least there would have been some hope there that to start changing things. And the record showed that he has not. He made things worse.
Alex, thank you so much. You've had an opportunity to present your thoughts. I appreciate that. Yeah. And let's see how other people are reacting to it. But thank you so much for your contribution today.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Richard from South Carolina, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Utrice. How are you? Nice to speak with you.
Same here. Thank you.
I go back a while with the WLIB, actually.
Wow.
But my brother actually used to have affiliation with that. But here's the thing that I'm concerned about, especially with the last caller, Utrice. I mean, like, to me, there's a stark difference between these two candidates. None of them are progressive at all. Let's get that up front. They're not progressive, not in the least. But there are differences. In other words, you sometimes in life, I've learned, I'm an older guy, you can't get everything you want. You see? You can't get everything. So you look at these two and you say, now, wait a minute, which one of these is going to do better for the country and for the middle class? And that's what I'm, that's my decision. That's what I have to do. And I think that I'm just surprised that people, I mean, I'll throw something out. I mean, just suppose as a hypothetical that John McCain was elected president. He was elected. And let's say that he accomplished, he got rid of bin Laden, he prevented the Depression, and so forth and so on. I think that, and I just have a gut feeling that he would be way ahead in the polls. That's just a fact of mine. I mean, as I said, I'm approaching 70, so I've been through the civil rights situation, go back in the 60s. So, you know, I've seen a lot, and I think that, as I said, there's a stark difference between these two. And Barack Obama, hey, I want a progressive president. That's the president that I want in there. But sometimes you can't get everything you want. Now, if I don't vote, I've already made a selection by not voting. That's my opinion.
Well, let me use a little bit of Alex's thesis here. If, in fact, you say you want a progressive, are you suggesting that Barack Obama is not it?
He's not it. No, he's not a progressive president. And I think that basically the way this system is set up right now, it's all about money. The corporations are running things, so you have to kind of, you know, you got to say, wait a minute, I have to kind of lean a little bit toward the corporation, or I'm not going to get in. I mean, you have to be a realist. So you're just not going to get in. Look what's happening in Congress right now. If he moves, he wants to move in a different direction, the Congress is saying no. Why?
But Richard,
yes.
Let me ask you again. All right, so you recognize, or you determined that Barack Obama is not the progressive president that you desire.
Yes.
What about the other choices? You also have wiped them off the table.
That's a good point.
The third parties.
But you're absolutely right. But again, the problem is that if they were in the debates, and you could see, wait a minute, the progressive has 30% of the vote, or four, and it's split like 1/3, 1/3, 1/3, or close enough. I mean, a lot of people would be piling onto that progressive. But again, what you don't want to happen is the wrong person to get in and run the country.
Okay.
Until we get to that point. So I think that not to vote, you are actually voting.
Well, that is a very interesting philosophical conundrum that you have placed on the table here, Richard.
Okay.
Let's see how people react to that. But, you know, this also says something that I remarked upon a couple of times about the third-party effort. It
yes.
does have a numbing effect when we have to confront a documented history of repeated failures. And the failures originate by in the context of not really preparing on a scientific level to engage in politics, so that it is almost a foregone conclusion that the third parties that are presenting themselves here as part of the choice that the electorate has, they have more than anything else going against them a history of failure. And nobody wants to join with a history of failure. So I had talked about,
mm-hmm.
can these parties retool and re-engage and understand that the job of a political effort in a political season, you don't have to preach to us about your ideology.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to convert us to thinking your way one way or the other on the basis of politics. Tell us about the vision, show us your structure, and show us a reasonable plan that is achievable
yes.
and that you intend to be successful at. And that would probably encourage what you were just remarking about. In the end, you want to cast your vote. Somehow, you can close your eyes and jump in the pool and say, okay, this candidate is not by any means perfect, but compared to some others out there, I think we have a shot.
That's
exactly where you are.
Absolutely. You've said it. Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much, Richard.
Thank you
for your contribution today.
Thank you.
Reginald from Pennsylvania, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Teresa.
It's
a pleasure talking to you again. I, too, used to listen to you on WBAI, and it's good to find you again.
Thank you. Same here.
First of all, Alex, he talked about not voting. You know, a lot of people in the past have given up their lives for voting. I mean, you have Fannie Lou Hamer and people like that who have really, really put their lives on the line and sacrificed to give up voting. And for you to come and say you're just not really interested, it's not doing nothing for you, is kind of, it's a bad thing. It's a bad thing. You don't want to really hear that. You want people to be informed enough to say, this is right and this is wrong. And that brings me right into the debates. All these undecided, so-called undecided voters. I mean, I live in Pennsylvania. I just moved up here, so I don't really have the rhythm of it right now. But if you're undecided now, I mean, a lot of people say that they don't want to vote for Obama, and for a lot of reasons, and one of the reasons is because he's black. But they're going to vote for Obama because he has an intention to do more for the people than Romney does. And if we can't see that, then we're in a lot of trouble. I mean, this goes to the dumbing down of America and all these other kind of of things that we don't really want to confront. You know, how can
so
you say
go.
You
Rachel,
don't want to?
You're talking here. I mean, you're giving us an idea that, and this was something that Richard kind of introduced today, and that is, yes, there's an idealism about politics, and we do have an idealism. We all do. I think we all share that.
Mm-hmm.
But now, when the rubber is meeting the road now, and you're saying that instead, let's be pragmatic.
Right.
So I have to ask you, can you live with that? Or is this where you think this is also part of the stark political reality that we have to deal with as a mature electorate? We may not get what we want, but we can at least make a distinction between what is available. And
that's exactly right. And you know, they talk about Romney not having, any backbone and not standing up for something. And this is what, you know, citizens have to do. Citizens have to stand up for something, you know. And you know, we can't say that, you know, well, we don't know. We're still undecided. We're still not sure whether we want to go back to what got us into this mess in the first place. Or, I mean, you know, there is some forward progress. Anybody who doesn't believe that there was no forward progress from 2008 to now, I mean, they're just being, you know, unrealistic. And we need to start calling people out.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Reginald, Newley of Pennsylvania. Thank you so much for joining with us today. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
All right, we go to New Jersey now, and Michael joined us. Hello, Michael.
Oh, hi, Utrice.
Hi.
I do have listened to you in the past on BAI, and I'm glad
Thank
to
you.
Hear your voice on the radio again.
Thank you so much.
You know, I had some interesting observations as I was watching the debate last night. You know, I really question whether we have a mature electorate at all. I think...
You don't think so?
I really don't. People consider themselves individuals, and they think they have choice and everything else, but I question that. I think that people are completely conditioned by what's around them, by their class, by so many things. And the idea that they think they're making an individual choice is illusory, really, I think. I've noticed that some of the things, they won't even touch areas. Like, I think, personally, the next big thing on the horizon is going to be sustainability. I think most of your listeners would agree with me, because this is quite unsustainable to have an unlimited growth kind of proposal. And both of these candidates are saying, who can grow faster? Who can, you know... Mitt Romney even criticized Obama because the population growth is slowing down.
When you're confronting the enemy, you have to confront him with everything that you can.
He was blaming Obama because there's not enough babies being born. So... I think the candidates are completely conditioned by the past, by watching Jimmy Carter go down, by watching the poor gentleman who just passed away.
George McGovern.
Yeah, George McGovern. And they've seen that, you know, if you tell American people to turn their thermostat down, or if you tell them that they got to be less greedy, you're out. They learn from this, so they conform. There is no greater conformity than the conformity of a politician. I think you'd agree. I mean, look at Mitt Romney. He conforms to anything he sees in the polls. He won't touch. He changes all of his, proposals over the last 18, 6 years or whatever, because they don't poll well. So he shifts the over to the other side. And
but they also are conforming, Michael, to the narrative. The narrative has really not changed. The narrative of supremacy of the United States globally.
Right.
The narrative of the chosen few in whom we should place 100% of our trust.
Right.
The narrative of the oligarchic organization.
That's right. They even have a term for it now. What are they calling it? Superiority, American superiority.
Exceptionalism.
Oh, exceptionalism. Right.
That's correct.
So this is an idea, you know, that you have to think of yourself as exceptional. So it's okay for 20% of the population to use 80% of the resources and everything because we're exceptional. We're different.
Well, you know, what I was trying to get at is in this time when you see a national election and the stakes are very high because this is now a super coveted position for many, many reasons. On a domestic level, it is about regaining turf that the ruling elite felt it has lost. It needs
Correct.
To regain it. And again, I'm not just hinting, I'm saying specifically it has to do with the racial power equation in the United States. On the external front, on the foreign policy front, it deals again with the hegemony, the right of the United States to rule the world and call the shots. And everybody has to, you know, be in lockstep with this one entity conducting itself not as part of a community of nations, but as the leader of the world.
Well,
so,
that's what Mitt Romney was saying last night, you know.
He said it.
Yeah, he said that we have to take the lead, and we're not in a community of nations. We are the bully of the nations. We
that's
are the
correct.
Supreme nation.
We are the supreme, we are the exceptional nation.
The exceptional nation, and that's this is, you know, and this has been polled, and you know, these kind of words. So, you know, I have so many questions about, you know, I think it's a crisis in consciousness, really, of human beings. And in this country, it's a crisis in of democracy, actually, because, you know, you... We're so far away from this machine, this political machine that's just rolling over everybody, that, you know, if it the wave, you know, brushes one way, you know, you feel like the fix is in, you know, and
yeah.
And it's hard to imagine that we have a, you know, that we have a say in all this because, for example, I take a look and I see certain things that, you know, on the Nation magazine, let's say, with Greg Palast comes out with some very damaging things that if it, you know, if it was broadly broadcast, could be very damaging to Mitt Romney. But you don't see it. It stops at the Nation and it doesn't go on to national TV. They won't watch it. Yet, it apparently it's backed up by facts. I'm talking about that General Motors stock that he had through the hedge fund and all that, and there were other things that come out, and of course, you know, the Mormon religion is not even mentioned. Nobody will go there, but that's, you know, they've got an interesting history also,
mm-hmm.
and so certain things can't be discussed or breached, you know, or even mentioned, and everything is just, you know, come down to a matter of who can, you know, who has conditioned the electorate and who can fit that conditioning with the right key and the lock and key, you know, to be so that the candidate is more conforming to the conditioning that they preconditioned everybody to. So they're sort of just lining up, you know, the pieces in a straight line, and whoever gets the most lines or whatever, It's a political game, I suppose. But I don't even know if that's going on. I think that there may be something, you know, that these candidates, as we've seen in the past with George Bush, et cetera, are selected rather than elected. So I do
feel... Well, of course,
feel...
we talk all the time about the selected officials. These are selected officials. We are expected, like lemmings, to show up on November the 6th and elect a selected official.
Right, so, you know, it concerns me that, you know, people become more and more educated, they go to college now, and, you know, there's so much information, and we have the internet and exploding information. But I'm very, I question if that has created a mature electorate at all, and if people are really individuals at all when they're making the choice, or they're just conditioned to make the choice, preconditioned on the left or the right.
I will go with the latter. I think we are preconditioned. And, of course, the media, and we talked about this here on the program as well, compliant press, seeing that it also has an interest in the outcome, and being a byproduct of an elitist system itself, would tend to guard the interests of the elite. And that's what they're doing.
So it appears.
Thank you so much, Michael.
You're welcome.
I just want to take this other call, but your comments and your contribution has been quite insightful, and I hope people would put it in the reservoir of information from which they draw in these coming days. Thank you so much. John Q. from Manhattan, the number to call, by the way, is 1-888-874-4888. Hello, John.
Hi, Eutrice. How are you?
Good, thank you.
You got one of the best shows on the internet, let me tell you.
Well, thank you so much. It's not me, it's us.
Okay, what's the question now? Because like I've been catching little bits.
The question is, what at this point, having concluded the Q&A, I call it, is not a debate.
Yeah.
We have now an appreciation, a little fuller appreciation of where the candidates are and where we are with respect to this entire electoral process, and just trying to figure out where you think you are in this queue.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, none of them really talk on the issues because most of them are reading from a script. If they vary from the script, they're going to stumble, and then they're going to be held accountable for it, so they stay within the lines. Barack's not going to say anything about Mitt. He doesn't want Mitt to say anything about him. That's going to be bringing up a whole can of worms because both of them have got really shady deals. If you listen to PRN...
Well, where are you in the scheme of things? What is in your mind now as a potential voter?
Well, I never voted for Barack in the first place. The thing is that the candidate that I would have voted for is not even, I don't think he's even on the ballot. But I went for Nader last time. But it would be one of the third-party candidates. If you're going to throw your vote away, then I would throw it that way. Because, like, throwing it in camp, it just registers. If a lot of people
I've heard of backhanded compliments. It's not a good thing necessarily to say if you're going to throw your vote away.
It's not throwing it away. It's showing that you're thinking outside of the box.
Now, what is the thinking outside the box when you vote for a third-party candidate, despite the very clear statistical likelihood that person and that party will not make it?
They won't make it, but they're talking about the things that you really call it, you consider important. Like, they are talking about the Constitution. They're very up on how the Constitution has been violated. They're up on the skullduggery that's been happening, the things that are not talked about on regular television.
John, a question to you. When you are in the process of voting, we are in this process of determining our political future as a country, are we to respond to what a party is making us feel like, or are we to respond to the pragmatic, practical outcomes that could be gained by supporting a party or an individual?
I'm sorry, you kind of broke up a little bit. What was that again?
In this process that we're in as a country, we're engaged in the process of determining our future, let's say, as a country. Are we to listen more or to react more to how we feel or how a party makes us feel, or are we to respond to the more pragmatic issue of what can be gained in concrete terms by supporting party A or can it be?
I think we should be more pragmatic and deal with the way you feel. I don't feel confident in the party system. As far as the Democrats and the Republicans, they're like two sides of the same coin. They follow that line. Malcolm even talked about the Democratic Party back in around 65, where he starts talking about the Dixiecrats and the Democrats. We still haven't come out of that.
You're expressing, and I appreciate your sentiments because they're very real, and this is where a lot of people are. This is why I keep saying, if the third parties were really serious, this is a time to build, a time to organize, not necessarily a time to run. You run when you are ready, when you have an apparatus in place that can deliver success on whatever modest goals and aims that you have. But this is the time to listen. I mean, there's a palpable disaffection out here.
But even the third party, if they see, like, more people turning out and supporting them, it gives them more drive to want to create more of a party or more of a structure.
Yes, but that's not our job. That's not the job of the electorate. The electorate is not supposed to... the electorate has to be addressed. This is the political science part of it. If you're running, if you're in the game, there are certain things you have to do. I have not seen a substantial presence of any third party in any community of color that I've been in. I have not seen it. And we go through a drought. We will go through another four-year drought, and then they'll show up again, and it would be with the attitude that you should just recognize that they're different. Ralph Nader, that you supported, was not in our community, period.
Okay.
So I don't understand the notion that because he has a particular profile, we, the electorate, ought to come to our senses and see how valuable he could be as a candidate and therefore take it on as our responsibility to assist him in that goal. That's not our job. That job belongs to the party. Get involved. Get to know the communities. Get in there. Act like you want us. But if you behave like the Democrats and the Republicans, you're of no use, and you really ought not be in the game. Or you come clean and say, you are for the people, but certain kinds of people. But don't run that game that you're there for everybody and that you represent the alternative. We will see by your actions whether you are, in fact, an alternative party. John, thank you so much for participating today.
Okay, you take care. Bye-bye now.
Thank you. Katie of Los Angeles, we have a little bit of time, but we're going to have to hear from you today no matter what.
Good to see you. What a pleasure it is to speak to you. I have an audio recording of you, Therese Lee, talking about elections and blacks in 2008. It was very, very highly valued. And I'm glad to see you continuing this discussion. Like so many other callers, I think that this false dichotomy of the two-party leadership should be exposed. I will not be voting this year. I'm not going to complain about anyone else who does, and I won't be trying to talk them into or not. I think that the idea of the corporate Democrat versus the corporate Republican really has exposed itself. And it reminds me of this level of manipulation, reminds me of the work of the master mind controller Edward Bernays, who operating in the 20th century really set up these systems by which this mass manipulation would captivate our attention, thereby distracting us from other areas of our lives where we could come together collectively and make a big difference in the way that we live, one of which I think is that we all should unite and rebel against the dominance of the medical pharmaceutical drug complex, which both the Democrats and the Republicans seem to be quite content with today.
Let the church say amen or something like that.
Yes.
But, you know, still, I worry that your view is one-dimensional. Life is three and four dimensional. How do you take a position that you can, from the whole panorama of things, that you can make your judgment on the basis of one major thing? I'm not indicting it, I'm just asking.
Well, absolutely. You're 100% correct. Life is 360 degrees. But if we have to prioritize, you know, people are often talking about the greatest internal or external threat to America. Well, if iatrogenic medicine is costing the lives of some 900,000 people per year, you know, actually dying and many more injured, then we could definitely prioritize that as a threat. If we were to look at economics, the $3 trillion that's being spent on the costliest healthcare system in the world that produces a rating of 41st out of 191 nations on the United Nations Index would definitely see how it's related to economics. Further, I would say this much. The progress that we can make when we redirect all of this attention given to political dialogue and discourse, all the hours and hours of debate, much of which will produce no measurable outcome, especially when talented people like yourself and your audience engage in this, if we were to redirect that on how people could just make simple lifestyle patterns and changes, such as even buying as much farmland as we can and growing our own organic foods and improving our lives on a spectrum, I don't think that this is such a narrow focus. Personally, I see this as a full-spectrum lifestyle enhancement.
Well, actually, you answered the question very, very well, because this is what has been missing. People have to understand that politics, at this level that we are exposed to it now, politics is about interests. And very often it is that people are not clear about their interests, but they are asked to identify with the interests, the preset and predetermined interests of others. And do you buy into what it is I'm selling you is pretty much the basis on which we vote. So I asked the question, and you gave me the answer. The idea is that we should have a consciousness, whatever that interest is, we should have that consciousness about what impels us either to embrace or reject a political offer. And that's where you have the same thing in common with our very first caller, Alex, who says he's not voting, and he had a particular interest that he said he needed to have, you know, resonate with the party, and apparently it's not resonating anywhere. So he's out. Thank you so much, Katie. It was a pleasure talking with you today. And that brings us to the end of our program. Tomorrow, a wonderful, wonderful program. We'll reach back in time in struggle with a wonderful human being. I hope you tune in and tell others to join this wonderful conversation and to help us grow this family right here at CRN.FM. Thank you so much for the privilege of being in your company. Bye-bye. Baby, I got your number.